Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back Yona Weiss with Weiss Advice, right? It's a wonderful way to put it.
It's great to be back. Happy to, you know, when you have me on the program for the second time, the Weiss Advice is twice as nice, as I like to say.
Yes, exactly. There's a lot of wisdom in what you bring to the table. So great to have you. And Yona with Medicine Spec, they are one of the leading companies in cost segregation in the United States. So before we jump right into the business, anything new and exciting in your world?
New and exciting in my world? Well, you know, right now we're actually doing this 10-day LinkedIn CRE commercial real estate challenge, which I do basically, 3-4 times a year, where I just like to encourage people in the commercial real estate industry to use the platform more productively. And, I love it. It's, you know, we usually have over 100 people to participate each time. It's a free kind of program. Essentially, it's just accountability to post every single day for 10 days straight. And then you really learn a lot about the platform and how it's so powerful. I've gained so much from it. And that's really why I started doing this, years ago. And I've seen so many incredible things come out of this over the years. So that's really the only thing that's, I would say, you know, new and exciting right now. But otherwise, yeah, life's good.
Yeah, thank you for your leadership. It takes a leader to get other people to get involved, get engaged. So thank you for that leadership. All right, so we've got the one big, beautiful bill in the United States, 100%. Bonus depreciation, not only restored, but made permanent. So how excited are you about that? That's straight tailwind to your business day in and day out.
Very exciting. Very exciting indeed. I mean, I remember when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act back in 2017 passed and first introduced, you know, the 100% bonus depreciation, albeit it was temporary at that point, meaning it, you know, only to the end of 2022. Well, at that point, I think cost seg in general got a huge like supercharge. Everyone, even people that had no idea what cost seg was before that, they started to learn about it and realize how powerful the 100% bonus was. So yeah, I mean, we saw directly tangible results, you know, the growth of our business over the past, you know, 5-7 years, just because of that. And now with the new, now it becoming permanent going forward from 2025 on, I mean, I can always see great things coming out of this for our business for sure.
Have people started calling you a lot more? It's kind of been expected to happen, but there's been a lot of suspense. Passing a bill is not easy, and a lot of political movements that took place, and finally it completed. So now it's a law. So are you seeing live increase in activities, or this is more of a, it will happen? There's a high confidence, but you know it takes a little bit of time to get people up and rolling.
A little bit of both, meaning I definitely see more movement right now. There have been a lot of people reaching out over the past few weeks since this has happened. And even prior to that, I mean, we've saw this coming basically when Trump took office, he promised, you know, very early on that this was on his agenda and, you know, a lot of tax cuts and restoring all the things from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that had phased out and making them permanent. That was something that he ran on and that was something that he promised early on. So we did see it. Obviously, it took time, had to go through the House, had to go to the Senate, you know, the whole process. But, you know, conversations that I've been having for the past 6 months have been, you know, we are looking at this. We don't know if it's going to be retroactive. We don't know if it's just going to be going forward. Finally, we have the law in writing and it's only going forward, meaning what was in 2023 and 2024, which were, you know, you know, 60 and 80% bonus depreciation relatively, that's staying as it was. And then, you know, the 2025 is now going forward bonus depreciation. It's going to be 100%. So yeah, I definitely saw, seeing more activity right now, but because what cost segregation is, it's something that applies very much when you're when you have new acquisitions, right? So you buy a new property, that's really when the time to think about getting a cost seg done is. So it's still a slower market, right, Mike? I mean, interest rates are still relatively high. I mean, not super high, not as high as it was, you know, 30 years ago, but it's difficult for some people to find deals that still pencil. So we're not seeing a huge influx, I would say, but definitely seeing some growth.
Yeah, I appreciate the wisdom. Today I was actually running a query on one of the AI tools, and just asking for the wisdom of AI, how these commercial real estate markets recoveries functioned. And it gave me some thoughts that these recovery cycles usually are slower until the interest rates are meaningfully lower. Mm-hmm. So we're getting a little bit of tailwind, but no big momentum yet. So right. It's just going to be...
There was just, I think, a drop today in the rates very slightly. So that's always a good sign.
In the Fed funds rate, maybe you're ahead of me. I didn't even pay attention. I think the market moved. Maybe 10-year Treasury. Sorry. 10-year Treasury yield could have come down, which is just right. As important as the Fed. In some ways, even more important that we see the longer end of the yield curve come down, because the shorter end is expected to happen. Whether it's Powell doing it at a slow pace or the next Fed chair, it's going to happen.
We're waiting patiently, but that shouldn't be the only reason, you know, why someone invests in deals. I know you have a lot to do with funding and finding secondary sources of funding and things like that. So I'm sure people are still making deals happen, right?
Well, I'll tell you this. So we definitely have a lot of people on a waiting list who want heavy depreciation deals in 25, right? So at this point, it's pretty clear and pretty obvious that we'd love to put a great core seg on top of a great deal, but you got to find the great deal. So it's a little bit of finding the deal, then do a core seg, then figure out how to get me more tax benefits. But I'll just make this one quick comment and we'll move forward. The 40% versus 100%, it's 2.5x. It's such a big difference that it should be motivating enough for folks to act.
Yeah.
When they were on the sidelines. Yeah, it's a clear. So let's go back to the basics. What parts, just for a second on a quest seg, when you're on a study, I just want to just step back for a little bit. 5-year schedule, 7-year schedule, 10, 15, what falls there, and typically how much on a multifamily project if a property is bought for, I don't know, $10 million for sake of simplicity? Typically on a core seg when you run it, how much can you bonus depreciate in 1 year?
So cost seg, we have to break down the property into its different categories, right? So different buckets, essentially different components of the property are going to depreciate on different schedules. So what goes in the 5-year bucket, what goes in the 15-year? You mentioned 7, 10. These are other numbers as well. Don't really apply to multifamily, so we'll leave those aside for a sec. We'll come back to talk about where they do apply. But you always have to subtract a small amount for land. So let's say maybe 20%. So we're left with, you know, $2 million going to land in your $10 million purchase. You're left with $8 million you can now depreciate. So the majority of the property is always going to be the majority of the value is going to be in the structure, right? The structure, whether it be the roof, foundation, walls, doors, windows, infrastructure, all that is going to be on that 27.5-year, that longer depreciation schedule. What we're going to put on a 5-year and 15-year schedule, 5-year would be anything that is inside the property that's non-structural or non-integral to the structure. That can be stuff like carpeting, flooring, shelving, cabinets, countertops, appliances, furniture, fixtures, window treatments, millwork, you know, anything like that, and many more things as well. All that's going to go in the 5-year. Typically, multifamily, we're going to see around 20 to 25% of that, of our 8 million of our tax basis is going to go into that 5-year category. You also have 15-year property, which is land improvements. Now, this makes a difference on what type of property you're buying. For example, a city property, if you're buying, you know, a multifamily in Brooklyn, a walk-up, or in the Bronx, there's virtually no land improvements whatsoever. You know, you may have a little sidewalk, maybe a little fencing, some signage. That's about it. However, if you buy a garden-style multifamily property, right, in the Southeast, you have, or wherever, it doesn't matter where it is, you're going to have a parking lot. You're going to have landscaping, pavement. Maybe you have a swimming pool. You'll have other things that are outside that are on top of the land, which are considered 15-year. And typically you'll have, you know, around, I'd say 5 to 10% of the property is going to go into that category as well. So all in all, you know, we can be, you know, anywhere from around 20 to 35%. Is it a big window? All right. And there are factors of what's the square footage, what type of property that, you know, things like that, that are going to contribute to the greater or lesser amount of accelerated depreciation. And so if you take that number, 20 to 30%, let's just keep around, then we're going to be taking, you know, somewhere around $2 million on average for, it's going to go that bonus depreciation route. So a $10 million purchase, easily $2 million bonus depreciation write-off. And again, can be a little more, can be a little less, but round numbers, pretty simple.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate that in-depth explanation. So other type of properties, let's just cover a few other sectors in commercial. So if you're dealing with some kind of retail versus storage versus industrial, just curious, what are the big differences? They don't have as many inside parts. So just give me kind of a high level how those are a little different.
Absolutely. I'll start with industrial because that's always going to be on the low end of the spectrum in terms of what the benefits are. As you mentioned, there's very little interior when you're dealing with industrial warehouse properties. You still will have, in most cases, the land improvements. So you'll have, you know, parking lot, you maybe have, you know, loading docks and things like that where that will be outside. But interior, what is there? You know, maybe have some shelving, maybe some security, you know, equipment, or if there's an office inside, you know, the office can obviously have the furniture and those kind of things are going to be in there. So warehouses, industrial is going to be on the lower end. We're typically looking at around 10 to 15% of the tax basis that we're going to put on that accelerated depreciation as compared to the multifamily, as we mentioned, you know, 20 to 30%. Then we'll go to self-storage, which really depends on the type of facility it is and some aspects of what is inside of it. So the type of facility, whether it's a walk-up, right? Some, you know, like a CubeSmart, like one of those big buildings like that, obviously going to have less because there's going to be less land improvements. There's going to be less interior things going on. Whereas if you have a spread out, you know, self-storage park or, you know, something like that, landscaping where it's more like an office break, you know, breakout like that, you will have, again, more land improvements. Again, the pavement, concrete, bollards, fencing, you know, you name it, anything like that, as well as certain things interior. The biggest thing for self-storage is climate control. So if you have individualized, you know, HVAC units in the storage units, which is pretty common, I would say, especially with newer build storage, it's almost always going to be the case. That's going to have a tremendous amount of value. Also the doors, the roll-up kind of doors and things like that, we'll have 5-year property value, other types of fixtures and lighting. So on storage, we can get upwards of 30% as well in terms of our reallocation. So it's a great asset class as well. Retail, also going to be in that same area. You will have in most type of retail, especially if you're dealing with like a shopping mall or something like that, even you know, strip centers, you will have land improvements. Again, I don't want to overlook the importance of land improvements, which is a 15-year property. Now, again, 15 years is accelerated from that longer 39-year schedule for commercial properties. But when you put that in the bonus depreciation bucket, that all goes into the first year. So we're going to be looking at how much is the value of all that stuff that's, you know, the pavement, concrete, again, a parking lot, signage, all that stuff outside. And then inside, it will depend on the type of retail it is. If it is a, you know, triple net, maybe, or, you know, maybe there's some deal with the tenants, who pays for the tenant improvements, and then who's going to be able to claim the benefit of depreciation on that. So there are some differences there in those type of things. Obviously, you can do cost seg on any type of property whatsoever. You know, besides for your primary residence, you can do it on anything. It doesn't matter if it's single family, multifamily. It's not just for commercial, not just for multifamily, as some people might think.
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom there, and it's kind of making me think about a deal we have coming up, closing late August in its open air shopping. And they got a ton of landscaping and improvements, and all that is 15-year schedule. It's just because you explained these are land improvements. You're making very nice landscaping, making the property look beautiful. It is that. And the other interesting thing, that property that we are closing is a land lease. So land lease, I assume you do not allocate any value to the land. You're basically buying the buildings on somebody else's land, on Port's land. So I assume that you don't discount 20% for the value of land, right?
Right. There's not going to be any land there. Again, land lease can be looked at in two ways, but and simply if you don't buy the land, you're just buying the building on top of it, and you can depreciate the whole thing. There's a different way of looking at it where you're really just if you're not actually acquiring it, you're just leasing the land. If that's the case, then meaning you don't actually own the building either. In that case, you can't actually claim the depreciation in that type of land lease. So it's important to clarify, which type you're dealing with and what type of ownership will be in order to, know how much depreciation you can take.
Yeah. I appreciate that. But in most cases with a ground lease, it's a long-term, it's considered to be purchase. You just have a long-term lease. It's kind of interesting here in New York City, World Financial Center, it's all on the ground lease. I mean, it's probably one of the most famous land leases in the mall. Port Authority owns that. Let's continue the conversation. So from the technical changes, anything you're doing different now versus the past, or it's just a matter of numbers? You're still doing the study, you're still doing all the same work. It's just gotten 2.5 times more exciting for people to buy these type of assets. And I'm really curious how much volume we're going to see pick up, because the first step in the recovery is a volume pickup. So more people get more interested with more demand, as it's been quiet. So I don't know if you have any comments on the technical implementation and then volume. Just curious, is it a 10% boost, 20% boost? Just any quick comments. I know it's forward statements. Who knows?
Sure. Yeah, I definitely do see more volume coming in. One of the biggest factors that I saw, when the 100% bonus depreciation was introduced the first time, was that it was more applicable for people with smaller properties, people dealing with, single families, or people dealing with properties where, it maybe didn't make so much sense to get a cost take done. But because the 100% bonus pushing such a big amount of deductions to the first year, it's becoming more popular. So for example, a little bit off the topic, what, some people may be used to, but short-term rentals, Airbnbs, for example, I saw a huge influx of people investing in those type of properties, or single families where, $200,000 purchase, that's really where I see my rule of thumb. Anything above that really makes sense to do a cost take on. And so it really makes the barrier of entry much, much smaller. So again, it may not be the audience, of our listeners here, but that being said, I know quite a few people who are, maybe have a vacation home and, they're maybe looking to invest in something. It's a great tax benefit that comes along with it. You can, rent it out, put it up on Airbnb, Vrbo, whatever, all these other platforms, Vrbo, and you can actually, do the costing on it, take it as a rental property as well. And very powerful. So put that out there. Definitely something to look into.
What's the cost of a cost sec? Just for comparison, of course, it varies probably with complexity of the exercise. But if you, take a $10 million asset, maybe 100 doors, kind of $100,000 a door, maybe garden style, not really expensive market, versus, $200,000-$400,000 Airbnb versus, some open air shopping strip center. Just curious, what does this thing cost for the sponsor or the operator to do the study to get the tax benefits?
Sure. So we have a flat fee, you know, based on the size and scope of work of the property. It is a sliding scale. So our starting point for single family homes, which is like the lowest end of the spectrum for, in terms of size of the property and scope of work, is we'll currently, the time of this recording, I should be very current, you know, it could go up in the future, who knows. But right now we charge around $3,000 typically for a full engineered study. So again, even if you're paying $200,000 for a property and you may be getting like a $40,000-$50,000 tax benefit, the $3,000, you know, cost of getting it done, which in of itself, you know, is a business expense tax write-off, is almost insignificant. And it's a sliding scale, which means not contingent on tax savings, not contingent on purchase price whatsoever. Basically, like for multifamily properties, you know, garden style, et cetera, we have one price. For retail, we have another price. Typically in the range of about, I would say, $5,000 to $8,000 is the typical range for commercial properties. You may have some that are, you know, large, you know, million square foot facilities that are going to be around, you know, 10 or upwards of that. But I'd say 90% of our commercial properties are going to fit in that $5,000 to $8,000 window. So yeah, it doesn't matter if it's a, you know, 300 unit multifamily property, it's going to be in that window. So yeah, huge benefit. And the benefit, obviously the tax benefit, is proportional, meaning the more you spend on the higher the purchase price, the more benefit there is. Because if getting the study done is going to cost you $5,000, whether it's 100 unit, you know, bought for $10 million, or it's a 300 unit bought for $50 million, if the cost of the costing is going to be essentially the same, it's, you know, the benefit, the tax write-offs are exponentially greater.
Yeah, it's the economy of scale kicks in. I guess at some point it makes sense to do it. I saw years ago, and just a quick comment, people used to offer on portfolio residential some kind of, I don't know if it's a desktop version of it, but more of, hey, all these houses look like this. Mm-hmm. Don't go out to look at every single one of them. There's 50 houses. Just kind of do it in a bulk manner. Do you do something like this? Just purely curious, if you do a bulk single family type of cosec.
Sure. Yeah, there definitely is something like that that exists. We do something similar in specific situations. It's not something obviously that we're going to offer for every small portfolio, but when you do have a larger portfolio, especially if the properties are very similar, if they're in the same locale, if they are, you know, obviously if they're built in the same, you know, development, that's a no-brainer. But even if they're just, you know, in the same zip codes or similar locations, similar builds, then it's much easier to do it. Yeah, you can do basically like a comparison cosec, where you're going to do a study on one or a few of the properties and kind of use like a rule of thumb based on that, or an averages, and to come up with the whole thing. And that is recognized by the IRS. There are several versions of the cosec that are recognized. And it's lesser version, I would say, not as authoritative as the, you know, the quality engineer-based study where, you know, an engineer is seeing every single location, et cetera. It's a little bit different, but still recognized. And obviously more cost efficient.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. It's just that's the good news, is the sophisticated organization like yours could come up with an elegant solution. And I really like the range. It's not that terribly expensive. For some reason, I was thinking, if you really scale the property up, the cost really scales up, but it doesn't. It's that's the beauty about this. So there's a great economy of scale once you reach certain threshold. Are there sort of any like pitfalls or negative things or concerns that folks should think about? Because this, you and this a bunch of other organizations, right? And people make a decision based on experience and kind of know, like, and trust, and you have the sure. in-depth expertise. So when folks are considering cosec shop, what's really important, what adds value versus a lot of people selling their services, and I've heard this story so many times, and it's almost like, how do you pick? And people pick one and they stick with one, and then I'm just curious, any pitfalls, any advantages that you have over other folks?
Sure. You know, like you said, the know, like, and trust factor is huge, especially when you're dealing with other types of, you know, partners and vendors or what have you. Some people see vendors, you know, including COSEG, as just a commodity, right? It's just, hey, this is something I got to do. I'm going to get three quotes. I'm going to go with the cheapest one. That's all. Now, if they are all comparable type services, and you know that may be a smart way to view it, but certain factors obviously are going to be important. Number one, you want to make sure that this is a company that is, you know, can be vouched for, right? They've been around long enough that you know that they're not just some fly by night. And believe me, there have been, I've seen in the years that I've been doing this, several companies kind of open and close trying to do this. And unfortunately, some that were not so honest and doing it the right way, which is unfortunate to see. And I've seen some people get burned that way. People come to me, hey, I got this done by this company and it really doesn't look like it's professional. I'm going to have to pay you to do it a second time because we want to make sure that it is compliant. And that's the second thing, which is probably the most important, is you want to make sure it's compliant. It fits with audit proof, essentially. If you ever get audited, anything dealing with taxes, you want to make sure that you're doing it 100% correct, because to get audited and then have to pay penalties and fines for doing it the wrong way, no one wants that. And so you want to make sure that that's something that's included in the cost of your cost seg, is that audit defense, that audit protection, if you are to be audited. And then what is the track record of the company? You know, our company Madison Specs has been around for over 20 years. We've done over 40,000 cost segs across all asset classes in all 50 states. And so you want to make sure that you have someone that's, if I do get audited, what's going to happen? Are they going to defend it? Is it going to pass? And we have 100% record with that as well. So those are probably the two most important things. And then obviously, I'd say something a little less important, but you want to make sure the person doing the cost seg has a very big, beautiful beard. I think that's important. You know, I really do.
That's a wonderful requirement. I concur. I certainly concur. There's a lot of wisdom in that. So thank you for sharing that. Any favorite win stories in cost seg? Just a couple of, I guess, lightning round questions.
Yeah, the biggest win stories. Biggest wins for me are always people who didn't know about cost seg beforehand and were stuck paying very high tax bills, and then did a cost seg and paying little to no taxes. So I always like to go back to a story with a guy who was a real estate broker out in California, one of the most successful real estate brokers in his county, making seven figures. And he came to me, he was paying easily $300,000-$400,000 to the Uncle Sam every year. He was writing a check. And he also invested in real estate, which means he had rental properties. He just never knew about cost seg. He learned about it, reached out. We had a property, and this was back when the 100% bonus depreciation still applied. He bought a multifamily property for around $4 million, and he was able to take a $1 million tax write-off, bonus depreciation deduction, from that one property. He had several properties, but just from that one completely wiped out his tax liability. So instead of paying $300,000 in taxes, he paid zero that year. And he was able to use that to put a down payment on a new property, a new rental property. And so that's always, to me, those are the biggest wins, where people who are doing it the right way, they're able to take those tax benefits. They know what they want to do with it. They're using that money to reinvest, to grow their wealth much faster. Really, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, this is very touching and personal. So appreciate you sharing. Do you have best advice for CRE owners in 2025 and beyond? Is there anything simple that comes to mind other than engaging Madison Spec to do a cost segregation study? So any other practical advice from any recent developments or your wisdom over the years?
Having people like yourself on your team where you can reach out, you can find someone who has the experience, who's been through up and down markets, I think that's the best advice I can have, right? If you can find partners, you can find people who can join you, help advise you, whether it be advisors, mentors, people who have gone through previous cycles. Because like you said, yeah, you can ask ChatGPT, see what's the best advice they do. But knowing someone who's gone through it with experience is probably going to help you to get through the other side. I think that's probably the best advice I have.
Yeah, I appreciate that sharing. You know, the observation that we're making is that ChatGPT and other AI tools, the knowledge is increasing, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. almost like you got information, knowledge, and wisdom. Right? There's three different things. The wisdom comes with years of experience, and wisdom is the last degree You can get information. You get information and knowledge from these systems, but the wisdom is not there yet. They're saying this is the maybe next generation of really right. intelligent AI where it will have the wisdom, but not yet. So at least us humans do have that element of, I agree with you. I appreciate you sharing that. What's the best way for folks to reach out if they wanted to connect with you? I know you're all over LinkedIn, but just how would folks reach out?
Yeah, I mean, that's the best way. Social media is, I'm very active, as you mentioned, LinkedIn, active on the other platforms as well. You can always go to yonaweiss.com. You can, you know, if you want, we always offer a free upfront estimate for any property. If you're looking to get a cost take done, happy to help. Feel free to reach out any of those avenues. But do me a favor, as I always mention, if you go to one of those platforms, whether it be LinkedIn, Instagram, X, whatever, don't just hit that follow button. Take 10 seconds and write a little note and let me know that you heard this, and definitely be happy to help.
Thank you, Yonah. This is very engaging and full of wisdoms, and I appreciate you coming back on the podcast, and looking forward to coming live on the LinkedIn live, which you're doing, which is just interesting too. It's kind of all this requires engagement. Engagement makes all the difference. These social media platforms without engagement, they're nothing. With engagement, they can add a lot of value. So appreciate that.
Awesome. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.